I'd like to call the Joint House and Senate Transportation Committee to order. Today, we're going to hear from the department, and we're happy that the commissioner is here. They're going to discuss what we call Chapter 152, which 152 basically was the bill that was passed in the last session dealing with transportation financing. And we assume that we would be normally a two-hour meeting, but we will be taking questions. And we might be running over, depends on the amount of questions. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner Sorrell. Commissioner Sorrell, if I may, maybe you could introduce your new counterparts, too. I think we have some new people in the department, at least one that I'm aware of. Commissioner, if you do that, appreciate that.
Okay. To my left, he's not new. Nope. Tim Hankel is our planning and programming director, division director, but I think one of who the chairman is referring to is Connie Sahibjian. Connie is a new deputy commissioner and chief engineer, and Connie is sitting back here. So I'm pleased to have Connie on board, and again, when I brought Connie on board, I reinstituted the chief engineer position and created a deputy slash chief engineer, and I felt that was pretty important to the department as we move forward. So appreciate having Connie on board.
Thank you. Commissioner, are you going to go through it, or Mr. Hankel?
I'm going to say a few words and then turn it over to Mr. Hankel. So let me first say thank you for the opportunity to come in front of you today. And I think one of the things I want to say is as many of you have heard me talk over the past month and a half as commissioner, one of my goals as commissioner is to be transparent in my own style of communication and in the way we communicate at MnDOT. And that's very important to me, that we be transparent communicating with all of our stakeholders and our partners. And we're here today to share information with you in good faith and share with you what we know, what we don't know, and to really seek your feedback where we might need it. The purpose of our meeting today is twofold. We want to share with you what we've done since we last met with you in April to implement Section 152. We also want to share with you the work we've been performing on our statewide transportation plan. And that I'm very, very excited about, because I think we all know we're at a crossroads in our transportation system in this country and in our state. And as we talk to you about our statewide transportation plan, I'm very excited about that, because I think you'll see as it unfolds that it'll be transformational in nature for us in our state, and I'm very excited about it. And I think it very much meshes very well with the guidance that you've provided us to move forward with. So before we get into our formal presentation, I'd like to share with you a couple of key points that I'd like to kind of lay the groundwork for Mr. Hankel and his presentation. And two key points that are very important to me as commissioner. One is as we look at our transportation system for the future, I firmly believe that we need to look at 21st century solutions to 21st century problems. And I didn't come up with that lingo. It was something that I learned from my previous boss, Secretary of Transportation Mary Peters, and I firmly believe that myself. And as we move forward with the information we're going to present to you today, that we need to engineer the right solutions for our problems, and we need to really find the right mix of funding for our problems, have the right mix of partners at the table, look beyond the traditional partners and have non-traditional partners at the table. And then we do need the right mix of solutions. The solutions that we provided for our system 10 or 20 years ago aren't necessarily appropriate for today. We need to look at low-cost solutions where appropriate and really work with our communities to have the right solutions. So I firmly believe that, and I think that's the basic tenet that you're going to see as we go through our presentation today. A second basic tenet that I'd like to share with you again that I think is very important as we move forward is the importance of innovation and creativity in what we do. And I can't say enough about that, but we really need to be creative and innovative in our solutions. And by doing so, we can begin to leverage our funds and provide the right solutions. And I think all we really need to do is look right in our own backyard at a good example of that. When you look at what we did on Trunk Highway 36, that was truly an innovative project. We had innovative contracting. We had innovative technical solutions. We had our first urban freeway closure in the metropolitan area, and that was an outstanding success story, but it was innovation that made that a success, and that's what we need to do as a routine basis. And you look at what we're doing with the Urban Partnership Agreement, truly innovation there. And with our emphasis on a bridge program over the next several years, I think there's opportunities to look at accelerated bridge construction and things like that that really could provide a lot of innovation in our program. So I want to leave those two points with you before we move into the presentation, because those are two basic foundations of what we're trying to lay out for you here today. That we are here to provide 21st century solutions to 21st century problems. We are here to look for innovation to be a basic tenet of what we do at MnDOT to solve our problems. So with that, I want to move into the presentation, and I'm going to provide you a general overview of some of the key points and messages of the presentation. Then I will turn it over to Mr. Hinkle, who will provide more detail.
Commissioner, if I may interrupt, if we just announced it. I forgot to. Senator Murphy and I, we joint chair of this committee, and I didn't announce that, so this guy sitting next to me is a co-partner of mine, I suppose, or I'm his. But anyhow, the other thing I want to announce, I believe there's some senators and representatives in the audience, and you certainly are welcome. We'd like to have you come up to empty chairs. We didn't know how many empty chairs there'd be, so any senators or representatives certainly can come up and ask questions, too, as far as that goes. So you're certainly welcome. And, Commissioner, do you want questions as you go through, or do you want to complete it and get the question?
I think if we could complete the presentation, that would probably be the best way to go about that. That would
be fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. As I mentioned, our prime purpose of today's meeting is to really provide you a status of the Chapter 152 implementation, and particularly focus on the 10-year bridge program, and provide an update on the statewide transportation plan. And as I said before, I'm very excited about that, and I think as we unveil that to you, you'll see it, that it is a transformational plan for us in Minnesota. The key points and conclusions that you're going to hear from us today, we will receive an estimated $2.6 billion over 10 years from the 152 tax revenues, and I will say this, we're very excited about the opportunity this provides to us, and we're looking forward to the future, and much of this revenue will go to the operating budget, but I will tell you we're being cautious about that, and we're evaluating where we should spend that operating budget appropriately. And we also looking at the repayment of the $1.8 billion of bonds. And as the last bullet indicates there, of the $1.8 billion, $1.7 was appropriated for investment in state roads. On the next slide, we indicate that the estimate of the legislative mandated bridge program is about $2.5 billion over 10 years. And you can break that out with $1.2 billion of bonds and $1.3 billion of MnDOT state road construction budget. And Mr. Hinkle will get into the more details of that in a few minutes. The remaining $5 million of the $1.7 billion bonds, those areas indicated there, the interchanges, $40 million, statewide transit facility improvements, and the District 7 legislative priority, and also accelerated pavement and safety projects. Now, one of the things we do want to highlight here that in our statewide plan that you're going to see, that the priorities that you're going to see are based on the direction that you all have provided us, the legislative auditor report that we're taking very seriously as we move forward, and basic MnDOT policies. And I think, as we've said in the past, the structural integrity of our system is a cornerstone of safety, and is the MnDOT top investment priority. And you'll hear us say that repeatedly here as well. And after we address the structural integrity of the system, well, we've got to look at the funds that are remaining. And at this point, it does appear that that will be somewhat limited, but we'll get into that in more detail again in a minute here. And we will address other needs through approaches to the system statewide. Again, these other needs, we hope to really introduce a high, strong element of innovation and creativity. And we think if we're able to do that, we can really get a good handle on some of these other needs in a new way and a new approaches. So, with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Hinkle, and he'll provide you more detail on where we're coming from at this point.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hinkle.
Mr. Chairman, members, good morning. For the rest of the presentation, I'll refer to the handouts as well as what we've got on the screen. Also, I want to make note of a report that I believe is in your handout as well. That's titled Minnesota Laws 2008, Chapter 152, the Bridge Program. As this presentation from this point on is really focused on and extracts from that report. For you and your staff, if you need additional detail, some of it is certainly provided in this report. And this report is our first attempt to honor the legislation that asks us to continually and consistently report on this program as we move forward. At the end of this presentation, I will talk about our state transportation plan as well and the implications of Chapter 152 on that overall plan. Starting with page 6 of your handout, if that's where you're following, the new requirements of Chapter 152 call for the development of a bridge improvement program that accelerates repair and replacement of trunk highway bridges throughout the state. This presentation, as I said earlier, is an extract of the thicker handout that shows the initial planning that we have done over the last few months since we last reported, as well as the proposed plan for us to meet the requirements that are included in Chapter 152. A basis for our planning is the new revenues, as well as how we look at how those funds are distributed. On slide 8 is the estimated new tax revenues from Minnesota Chapter 152 for the time frame 2009 through 2018. If you look on the left side of this slide, you can see the new tax revenue estimate broken down into the various categories, the motor vehicle fuel tax increases, the registration tax, the rental car fee increase, as well as the sales tax on motor vehicle leases, each with their own figure and an estimated total of $4.459 billion. When we look at the distribution on the right side, you can see what we are assuming to the Trunk Highway Fund at $2.559 billion. The remainder going to the County State Aid Highway Fund, as well as the Municipal State Aid Fund and Transit Assistance Fund in the various categories. Again, it's the $2.559, which is the basis for the bridge plan and some of the other required elements of the plan that we will be looking at in terms of our proposed distribution. The bridge program, as required in legislation, will span 10 years, and a number of assumptions were made in its development. The bridge office, our Office of Investment Management, as well as the district offices across the state of Minnesota, have worked together over the past 8 or so weeks to identify the needed improvements for each of the bridges that we have proposed in the bridge improvement plan. We've looked very closely at the type of fix, working with the bridge office and the district, whether it should be a repair or a replacement. We've also completed some preliminary or planning level scope and cost estimates for each of the bridges that's proposed in the bridge plan. We've looked at the overall timing based upon the status of the bridge in terms of its structural adequacy, as well as some other assumptions that are listed here. And these are really important assumptions for us all to understand as we move forward. Let me walk through each of those very quickly. First and foremost, the bridge plan, as proposed, is based on current and predicted bridge conditions as provided through our inspection process. Second, the current projections of annual inflation rates are used, and you can see the breakdown as you go across the years within this plan. Fiscal year 2009 at a 7% inflation rate. As we move out further in the plan, fiscal years 2010 through 2012 at 5%, and then the final years fiscal years 13 through 18 at a 4% inflation rate. Third bullet, we are in the process of finalizing the scope and cost estimates for these projects. So I'm trying to make very clear here that these are planning level scopes for these projects and planning level cost estimates at this point. There are many unknowns that still exist. Our intent is to go out and work with you and the public over the next 2 or 3 months and internally work to finalize the scope and the cost estimates for each one of these bridges in this bridge plan. So we expect that there could be some changes in the preliminary scope and the preliminary cost estimates over the next few months. Fourth bullet, projected federal funds. We're using a stable assumption for federal funds, even though we know that there is some volatility in the potential federal forecast. So at this point in time, the 2009 through 2018, we are assuming that we continue to see a stable rate as an assumption for this bridge plan. Last, a footnote, really, that we have put this plan together based on timing, based on scope, based on cost. 75% of the overall cost goes to about 11 bridges within this 172 bridge plan. It doesn't take very much for one of those bridges to change in cost or scope for there to need to be adjustments in this plan. So it's a footnote to make clear to everybody that if we make any minor adjustments, we will be looking at a domino effect as we look at that overall plan. Section 165.14 of Chapter 152, if you're looking at the details, directs the commissioner to establish a trunk highway bridge improvement program with an emphasis on structurally efficient and fracture-critical bridges. A tier system is included in the legislation to group the bridges, with Tier 1 being the highest priority. As you look at this table, we provide you a summary of all of those bridges that fit in the Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 category, as well as an other category. If you're looking for any details on each one of these tiered bridges, you can look at page 5 in the report, where there is a summary of bridges by tier. And let me just go through this table very quickly with you as summarized in that report. In accordance with the legislative intent, the Minnesota Department of Transportation proposes to accomplish the following by June 30th of 2018. Tier 1 of the 10 fracture critical bridges, all will be replaced or under construction. Tier 1, all 30 of the trunk highway structurally deficient bridges that are not fractured critical will be replaced, renovated, or under construction. On the Tier 2 side of this table, of the 61 fractured critical bridges, it is estimated that approximately 22 will be replaced. Of the remaining fractured critical bridges, approximately 11 will be repaired or renovated. Again, in the Tier 2 category for the structurally deficient bridges, all will be prioritized and scheduled for replacement or repair, considering road posting status, the maintenance history and condition, and sufficiency ratings. And then in the Tier 3 category, which is combined on the far right side of the column, of the 11 structurally deficient bridges in Tier 3, replacements will be prioritized considering road posting status, the maintenance history, and condition rating. That being said, the Tier 3 bridges are not required to be addressed under the bill by June 2018. The last note I would make on this table, just so it's clear, as you look across at the structurally deficient bridges row, you can see that there are 100 bridges total under the Tier 1 through 3. Note in the footnote that this includes 11 structurally deficient Tier 3 bridges. And finally, the Commissioner of Transportation has also designated one other bridge that needs to be replaced based upon its posting status, and that is noted here as the Trunk Highway 105 bridge in District 6. Moving to the next page. based on the initial scope and cost estimate, the planning level cost estimate and scope, and the proposed year of construction as designated by the district. For all of the bridges in the program, MnDOT can meet the requirements of the legislation. Everything does fit in. OIM proposes, based on the estimated total project cost, a funding strategy. And this particular draft bridge summary is that funding strategy. You will note here that that funding strategy goes beyond the bonds that are provided in this legislation to the State Bridge Preservation Fund. That is the corridor fund that was established that uses a portion of the federal funds distributed to the state to distribute centrally across the state to address some of those major bridges that are not necessarily fundable by districts because of the scale and magnitude of those bridges against the target that they get on an annual basis. This funding strategy also includes district target funds to be able to, in total, fund the total bridge needs. As the commissioner related in his opening remarks, the total cost of this bridge program is approximately $2.5 billion. It does require that we combine target dollars with the dollars available through this legislation, as well as those federal funds that are coming for those major projects in combination to be able to address the total needs. The other note I would make about this funding summary is a strategy to program only a portion of the 10-year plan and to annually update the program until we get to the 10-year horizon. So if you look at this screen, see if I can point to it here, you'll see a segment that says programmed in the STIP, and then you see a portion at the top that says planned. Right now we have a bridge plan for 10 years. MnDOT annually establishes a 4-year STIP. What we're saying is we're going to program, complete the scope and cost estimate, and create a budget for those projects that are in the program category. Next year at this time, we will add 1 year, and we will continue to do that until we get through the planned project. That will give us the flexibility to manage through this program with the available funds and any changes that might occur in the overall planned investments as the bridge system matures and as we get more information about the status of federal funds as we move forward. The next slide gives you a quick summary of the schedule for the 11 major projects as well as the remaining Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 plus other projects. Again, this is broken down into programmed versus planned. As I mentioned earlier, the major bridges that are listed at the upper portion of this graphic give you a summary of those 11 bridges, which account for approximately 75% of the total funding need for this overall plan. As you look at this, you can see the overall schedule. The schedule shows the start of construction for each of those bridges listed here in both the program category as well as the planned category. Some of these major bridges will take a number of years to complete, but these are the starting years for each of those planned investments. I think the other footnote on this particular graphic is in the lower right-hand corner. There you can see a summary of each of the tiered bridges, the year or time frame in which those are being accomplished. A particular note is the other category as well as the Tier 2 fix after 2018. There are some of the bridges that are expected to not be in need of repair and or replacement for this legislation, and those are noted here. There is a complete list of all of these bridges in the appendix of your thicker report. And so if you are looking for a specific date for the, in particular, program construction for Hastings, the Red River, Dakota, or Lafayette, those can be found in the appendix, or I believe on page 5 of your report is a further breakdown of the specific start dates for those projects. And for ease of reading, we've provided a draft bridge improvement plan map. As you look at this map, the Tier 1 bridges, of which there are 40, are the red circles. The Tier 2 bridges, 120 of them, are the blue square. And the green triangle is the other bridge, as identified by the commissioner. In summary, as provided by this graphic, Chapter 152, total proposed bond utilization, MnDOT can meet the requirements of Chapter 152. However, as you look at the bottom line, bonds remaining on this graphic, you can see that there are 2 years where the plan is currently underfunded, currently based on current scope and current cost estimates. So one solution for that problem, if it is a problem by the time we get to that point in time, is to look for the availability of bonding authority earlier than as provided in legislation so that we can address the bonding needs in those particular years. It's a footnote for consideration. Right now, we're early in the planning game when it comes to the costs and scope and the overall rollout, but that may be a strategy that we need to employ as we look ahead well into the future. Note here as well, we go beyond the bridge program. We include other requirements that are in the legislation. The statewide transit facilities improvements, $50 million identified for distribution across the state. We will go through a solicitation to identify what those projects are and where those funds can be distributed. Bullet three there, metro interchanges. There too, the note, first and foremost, Devil's Triangle was let. That was one project that we reported on during our last meeting. That project is moving forward. As the commissioner noted in his remarks and in the early slides, we still have $30 million available, 10 of which can go to metro projects, as well as $20 million that can be distributed to rural and outstate Minnesota. We are looking for help and ideas for what the best approach to distribution is. We began talking to your staff last week about options for distribution. And if there's time, Mr. Chairman, we could talk a little bit more here about what your wishes may be for how we distribute those funds. Finally, Bullet 5, District 7, legislative priority. As the Commissioner stated, we intend to fund $100 million worth of investment on the southern segment of Trunk Highway 60. And then finally, investments that have already been designated in 2008 through 2010 for pavement and safety initiatives at a total of $275 million. Note that some of these figures show up in a given year. This is a plan, again, as we figure out where those funds are needed and what year they are needed, this table will be adjusted to reflect the actual program projects, especially in the transit and interchange category. Moving to slide 13. This legislation also provides for a base operating budget increase for the department in the amount of $75 million. It further specifies that those funds will be distributed $41 million annually to operations and $34 million to program delivery. The list that you see on this page as well as on page 14 summarizes some of the principles that are guiding the discussion and establishment of how those funds will be distributed, from snow and ice service delivery needs to delivering the regular program to the bridge fracture critical inspection documentation and preventative maintenance needs across the state, as well as pavement preventative maintenance, including hydraulics and culverts and pavement patching, etc. Going on, other areas of need, emergency repairs, the safety area, as well as lighting, striping, and shoulder needs on the preventative maintenance side of the business. The commissioner is directed staff to develop a needs and is working over the next few weeks to make a recommendation to him. We would hope that in 2 or 3 weeks we will make, through the commissioner, final decisions about how that base $75 million will be distributed within the department. I'm now on slide 15, which moves us to some quick discussion of the work that the department is doing to update the state transportation plan. The state transportation plan is updated every 6 years, and we are nearing the time where, under the requirements of state and federal law, we must again update that plan. The timing is good for updating this plan, given the recent legislation, House File 2800, Chapter 152, as well as recent reports that have been generated by the legislative auditor, etc. There are a number of implications to the statewide transportation plan, and those are listed here. And the plan direction that we are proposing to roll out is listed here as well. The plan direction will reflect all of these areas. Number one, the legislative direction that's included in Chapter 152 for Tier 1 and Tier 2 bridges. It'll reflect what we've seen in terms of the aging transportation system, the bridges and pavements and signing and lighting. The legislative auditor's report that suggested that we should align investments with our priorities, that historically, given some of the capacity needs, we have not been meeting our targets on the pavement investments. And really looking at a philosophy that moves more, you know, where we don't promise more, what we do is we under-promise and maybe over-deliver. We're looking at the revenue and cost outlook. As I mentioned, we're certainly questioning where the federal government might go with federal revenue, volatility, and gas tax. Is affecting the potential for future revenues. Cab fee revenues are being affected by the gas prices, as well as we expect to see increases in costs for construction due to gas, steel, concrete, all somewhat related to the oil industry. We're recognizing that we're probably not looking at business as usual. We're going to focus on critical performance issues, infrastructure in particular. We want to look at applying low-cost, high-benefit strategies where feasible, and we want to shift away from traditional major capacity expansion projects if that's feasible. This is a planning effort where we're going to look at the opportunity for lower-cost expansion mobility solutions before we jump to those major commitments that may cost much more than some of the lower cost fixes. So the proposed trunk highway investment priorities and strategies that we will be rolling out, number one, preservation continues to be our top priority. For the bridges, fully fund the Tier 1 and other needs, pavements, we want to make progress rapidly towards the performance target, not changing performance targets, but making progress to get there, as well as our other assets to address needs, which are many and when it comes to the traffic side of our business. Second, safety always trumps, but in terms of investments as we roll out plans, we will focus on run off the road and intersection crashes, system-wide preventative strategies, and employing more of the technologies like cable barriers, rumble strips, etc., that help us to, in a cost-effective way, address the serious needs. Third, mobility, fixing the problem, as I said, with low-cost solutions wherever possible. This includes our interregional corridor system across the state, as well as dealing with metro congestion in the Twin Cities metropolitan area. And finally, there are needs that exist within the communities as we partner to address collectively the transportation needs, especially those places where we have connections of communities to the trunk highway interstate system. This plan will provide a provision of up to 5% of the total investment available for cost sharing for locally initiated improvements. that may not necessarily target one of our performance or policy areas, but looking ahead towards partnerships and opportunities for looking at the total transportation system, acknowledging that with some funds available to do that. Slide 17, our previous plan was really focused on MnDOT and focused on highways. With this plan, we intended to be, as much as we can at this point in time, a multimodal transportation plan where we're considering trends and issues and, where feasible, solutions for transit, freight, rail, air, ports, and waterways. We want to recognize the multi-jurisdictional needs. We want to provide a framework for cooperation where we're working together for the transportation system and not solely focused on the interstate and trunk highway system as a transportation solution. And we've updated our policies and we'll be updating our performance measures and targets associated with those policies in light of the direction that this plan is going. Slide 18 gives you a quick summary of the policies that are currently in draft form. You can look through those very quickly. I do not intend to go through those in detail unless you have some specific questions on each of these, other than to remind you that these policy areas are the basis for specific performance measures and targets that are established so that we have the means to understand what the needs are and the means for the districts as they update their district plans to reflect on these performance areas, our priorities, and to establish specific constrained investment plans based on the revenues that are available. Final slide. This slide summarizes the work that we have planned to go out and reach out to our stakeholders through the months of June and July. This will be our opportunity to work with our partners across the state, to meet with them, to give them some of the same information, our proposals and the implications to our state's transportation plan, the input on Chapter 152 and the bridge plan, as well as the interchange, et cetera, transit elements, and to get feedback on the transportation policy direction, our priorities, and eventually our investment needs. These dates are set, and hopefully we will see you as well as your constituents at these meetings so that we can hear more details from you and your customers as we move forward. Again, what I'm trying to make clear here is that these are both plans that are in draft form, the bridge plan as well as the state plan, and we want to work over the course of this summer to get as much input as we possibly can, as many as we can, so that at the end of the summer we can gel an investment strategy that makes sense for the state of Minnesota, and we can finalize a bridge plan and the other elements of Chapter 152 to move forward. The last slide just gives you a summary of some of the other Chapter 152 requirements. Commissioner Sorrell is working to assign staff to some of these studies that are required under the legislation, and you can expect also that he's setting up membership per the legislation on some of these committees necessary for us to move that agenda forward as well, and we'll be working over the next few weeks to identify the leadership and membership of these committees to address the intent of the law. I will note that in your appendix there is a great deal more information that I do not intend to go through on, for example, information that was presented at the last meeting with you reporting on the first couple of years of projects, more details on the law and requirements, as well as the more detail on the state transportation plan. That completes my presentation, Mr. Chairman, and we would stand for any questions.
Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Gottfried and Commissioner Sorrell. I have a question about your comments about federal funding and the ability, what the department is going to do to leverage all available federal funding. And I'll preface that by saying that, first of all, your staff has been very great to work with on the planned reconstruction of the Hastings Bridge. Many members of your staff have now attended regularly the Hastings Bridge Coalition meetings and have been working with the local units of government to talk about what, in particular, the city needs to do to prepare for this project. But on the other hand, I've gotten some mixed messages as to the administration's position on federal funding. And so I wanted to ask perhaps if you could explain more or clarify that the department is going to be requesting all available federal funding that could be available for some of these projects. And the discrepancy I've noticed is that sometimes higher officials will say things like, well, we have all the money we need for this local project that can be funded at the state level through the bill that we passed or that was overridden. But then on the other hand, federal representatives, in particular Congressman Klein, has been very adamant that there are going to be no requests for earmarks for this project. And so I wanted to ask publicly what the administration's position is on requesting federal earmarks, because it would seem to me that while I think there's a very good plan laid out here, you did indicate that down the road perhaps there might not even be enough money here. So as a policy official, it just seems to make most sense that MnDOT would be requesting all available federal funds that could possibly be available.
Commissioner or Mr. Hinkle?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, MnDOT established a policy regarding earmarks a few years ago. That policy regarding earmarks states that if we are going to pursue earmarks, and our policy is to assure that we're getting every federal dollar that we possibly can, that those earmark requests need to be consistent with our long-range plans. And when I say consistent with our long-range plans, that typically means that it needs to be in the constrained portion of our long-range plan, in that they are investments that we've proposed through regular funds and don't change the priorities that we've established in the state for what's important for investment. So if there is a request from Congress for states to apply for earmarks, we would typically honor that request consistent with that policy. And I guess that's the bottom line.
Do you have follow-up? If the members have a follow-up, let me know. Otherwise, we're going to move rapidly and go to the next one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be quick here. So I just want to be clear then. MnDOT will direct the local units of government, in this case, Hastings, to request federal funds because the Hastings Bridge project is clearly a priority of the state and in your plans, as you described.
Mr. Hinkle?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, MnDOT does not have the responsibility to direct. What I'm suggesting is that Congress has the responsibility to direct, and the department, in cooperation and in consultation with the local government, would respond if Congress does request earmarks. I don't know if Congress is going to request earmarks for this next appropriation or reauthorization.
As long as that was came up, Mr. Hinkle, I didn't want to bring it up yet, but supposedly next year the Highway User Fund is broke, and my understanding is that each state is going to get 34% less, and already we've got advanced construction monies that have been, obligated since last 3-4 years, and every year we're paying that off. Aren't we looking at something next year that's going to be way less than what we have this year? I see one of the numbers you have given, it's right off the bat, it's $142 million less next year than what we have this year, even with the new monies that under Chapter 152?
Mr. Chairman, we are optimistic that Congress will make the corrections necessary, and the assumptions that I talked about earlier when it comes to this bridge plan, as well as our regular program, assume a stable level of federal funding, different than what we're hearing might be the case. And we're assuming, for planning purposes, that
that appropriate corrections will be made so that we can continue the program as planned.
Representative Hollingsley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a couple of questions, if I may. One is, and I may have missed it on those subsequent charts, on page 8, you reference, it looks as though in these following pages that we know where the money for those Tier 1 and Tier 2 fracture critical bridges is coming from. But the Tier 3, 11 structurally deficient, do I miss it, or do we just simply in the next 10 years not know where that revenue would come from for the Tier 3, 11 structurally deficient bridges?
Mr. Henkel?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, as you can see, I'm making sure I'm giving you the right information. The bridge plan, as we've laid out here, for the 172 total bridges, is based on the assumption that all of those bridges are affordable. And so we are budgeting for, in this plan, every single bridge that is listed here, total of 172 bridges. None are left out.
Including the Tier 3.
Representative Hollingsley?
That is correct.
And then, Mr. Chair, on page 16, I think is where we first see it, and again on 16, fix the problems with low-cost solutions. Always makes me a little nervous, because we often say, you get what you pay for. And particularly when I see as an example of that, I'll just choose shoulder conversions, because we're driving on a lot of them now on 94 and Highway 280. And presumably they were there for a reason before, and presumably that was a safety reason. But now suddenly, as a low cost, we're going to drive on shoulders as a new lane. How does low cost and safety, how does that connect in your mind?
Mr.
Chairman, Representative Hausman, the connection is this. We want to review low-cost, cost-effective solutions and apply those where feasible. There will be cases where it's not feasible and we need to address the commitment. We need to do that where it's safe as well. And as we look at the feasibility, we'll look beyond cost to safety as well and assure that those decisions for any of those types of cost-effective solutions is feasible from a safety perspective as well.
Representative Hollingsley, do you have more questions?
Just one more quick one.
Representative Hollingsley.
17. Because this one's kind of close to the heart. This plan, this is implications to statewide plan, and this plan update under multimodal. And I would specifically note transit, rail, and ports. And those, unfortunately, were all subject of line item vetoes in the bonding bill. And I think the one that surprised me particularly was ports, because it was a fairly small amount of money, and yet that was one of the line item vetoes to zero. And then, of course, the transit and rail, where there are federal dollars that we will get only if we match that, and particularly the one that I understand is coming up. The last 2 years, we've had that line to Chicago, where Congressman Oberstar told us in the next bill he's going to put in $1.6 billion for that Midwest Regional Rail Initiative. And unless we get our state money on the table, we would be left out of that. So help me with that line and what sort of advice the department gives to government.
Mr. Henkel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman. This line up here, first and foremost, because we want to move away from solely a highway plan to a multimodal plan. What we mean by moving to a multimodal plan is looking at the trends, looking at the issues, identifying the needs. It's the role of this plan then to inform the Commissioner of Transportation as well as our stakeholders of what those needs are in an effort to affect future legislation as well as future opportunities to make the right decision about the right solution, which might not always be highways. And so it's here to do that. Now, we have been impacted, but this planning effort is necessary, especially for ports and freight and rail, to be able to identify those issues. As far as the transit topic that you're talking about, connections to Midwest Rail, connections to other regional centers across the U.S., first and foremost, the legislation required that a freight/rail plan be completed, and the department intends to do that. We need to talk some more about the funding issue associated with that. The law does allow us to do this. It said we could use Mercy funds as one of the funding sources for that, but it also took away some of the Mercy funds, so we need to figure out how we do that. But it's that plan that helps us to meet the intent of the national laws regarding funding availability. And the recent passage by Congress of appropriations for FTA-initiated rail starts in the U.S. allows states like Minnesota, Wisconsin, others to compete for funds. And Representative Hausman is talking about that competitive process and the requirements. We must have a state plan and or other plans that designate what the priorities are for those rail systems. Without that, we couldn't compete. So we intend to try to get to the place where they've identified what that transit system should be and what that freight system should be, so that we're at least in a position to be able to compete if that competition is allowed.
Representative Hornsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and either for Mr. Sorrell or Mr. Hinkle. A couple questions on the Winona Bridge. I know the city of Winona sprung into action pretty quickly and developed that ferry service, and I wanted to know if there's a plan to reimburse the city for their costs that they fronted for this. And I think it begs a larger question: with this ambitious bridge plan, we may have a number of other of these, you know, fairly short notice closures where local governments are going to have to come up with solutions. Is there a policy that Minnesota has on this question of, you know, the cost that local governments incur and reimburse them for, you know, the alternative plans that they themselves place? I was very impressed with how the city of Winona did this, but right now they're kind of holding the, for a small community like that, to front those hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mr. Hankel, can you answer that one?
I can answer that, Mr. Chairman, Representative. That's an excellent question, and I think you raised a good point there, that that's something we need to consider a policy for the future. In that particular situation, we did have a lot of extra costs that were incurred, and a lot of that was, if you could go back to working with the community and the resiliency and the creative ideas that the community came up with, we have been concerned with those same issues, and particularly the cost of the transit options that we utilized during this time. And we will make the community whole. We will. We have investigated how we're going to fund those costs, and we have committed to reimburse the community for those transit costs. And we've looked at various options and ways to do that, but we will do that. And we do need to look in the long term, however, and figure out some policy so that when we encounter these situations and how we're going to move forward with that.
Representative Hornstein, do you have a number of questions?
No, just one quick follow-up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So when, thank you for that, Commissioner, and when do you think you'll be able to have a policy in place? Again, I think this could happen tomorrow again. And do you have a sense of a timeline of when that policy will be in place? Because, again, I could see this happening a number of different cases, even in the short term.
Right. Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's another good question. And I think our policy is evolving as we speak. And I think that it's not and you're absolutely right. I mean, we could encounter this very quickly here again, and we have to address this in the immediate. And so we need to have a policy on how we're going to do that. And I think it's not unreasonable to have a policy in place which would look at these kinds of options within a matter of a week or two to really outline what options we have available and how we might look at funding those options with the community. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hinkle, on page 12 under F3, you talk about the District 7 legislative priority, and you outlined the one segment on how you're going to fund that, and also when you're going to start construction. Could you also address the other three segments that were in the bill? The legislative intent was clear, and I was just wondering if you could comment on that, please.
Mr. Hankel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hamilton, the I believe number one for everybody, there is another handout that summarizes the approach to that Trunk Highway 60, and that's this one pager. Everybody does have that. As Commissioner Sorrell said in his opening remarks, as we've looked at the requirements in the legislation for Tier 1, Tier 2, and other bridges, and we look at the financial requirements associated with those requirements, as well as the requirements in the law regarding the status of the environmental work on Trunk Highway 60 specifically, we come to the determination that the only affordable segment within this legislation is that segment from Bigelow to Worthington. That does not take us away from the responsibility to review needs that are associated with the remainder of Trunk Highway 60 to the north. And it is the commitment of the department to review the needs of those segments to the north, in particular from a safety perspective. So a safety audit will be completed to identify needs, and if needs surface that need to be addressed, those individual needs to the north will be addressed with our regular funds where appropriate. As I said in my remarks about the state plan, our top priority is infrastructure, but safety trumps. And so if we identify safety issues along that segment, we will address those issues where necessary. But only $100 million of the bonding funds remains to be able to put forward to that high priority segment to the south, which basically goes from the Iowa border to Interstate 90.
Representative Hempel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hinkle, when I'm looking at the sheet, you talk about the EIS, and you have the language in there, the updated EIS. In the language, as far as what was in the House file, it talks about the segments of the project that had an environmental impact statement. All four segments of that project have had an environmental impact statement. And so when you put down here the three segments that have not, that's false. All four have had an environmental impact statement. When you talk about safety, I'd like you to, when you come out and you have these District 7 meetings, I see you're holding one in Mankato, North Mankato. I ask that you hold one out in Windham. And we'll talk to the families that have lost loved ones on this highway. We'll talk about the dangers of this highway as well. And you take a look at the number of the fatalities, the accidents, minor and major, and there is a safety concern there. So I'm asking every one of you, I'm inviting you out, and I'll set that up, and I'll invite you out there to Windham so you can visit with these folks and understand the importance of this as well. This has been a project that has been on the table for over 40 years and keeps getting pushed back. We know what the legislative intent is. It's clear. We have my signature on this. We have Senator Vickerman's signature on this legislative intent, and we also have the chairs of both the Senate and the House on the legislative intent. So to say it's anything other is absolutely wrong, and I expect you to come out and visit with us on this, and we can make this right. Thank you.
Mr. Hinkle, do you have a comment or not?
Thank you.
Representative Milton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions came up in my mind as you were speaking, and I've got a couple of questions here for you. One has to do with my first question is, what are your assumptions on income or the revenue streams coming in? Because you talked about it, how the money flows. Are you being optimistic about the money coming in, or are you taking the way the economy is going right now? Car sales are down, leased vehicle sales are down. So are the revenues coming in as you're projecting, or are they falling behind, and is that going to then put this project farther behind?
Mr. Hinkle.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, as this slide shows, we're playing the middle of the road when it comes to revenue projections. We're not assuming an upward trend. We're not assuming a downward trend. We are assuming that we would see stability. We're assuming that we would see MVEST, et cetera, come back to a place where we have some stability as well. Now, frankly, as we watch what's happening with happening with gas prices and how that's affecting DMP, it seems like there might be a slow downward trend occurring.
So the risks that I put forward here associated with that are that if we see a downward trend that comes to be, we will need to make those types of adjustments. But to be clear, right now we're assuming stability over the course of the 2009 to 2018.
Representative Earhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, and one more question that this was on a different subject was, you talk about low-cost or short-term solutions that we can get more traffic flow in areas. I know it's been raised by some of my friends in the legislature from the St. Louis Park area, where we've done those, and in fact it's going to then push some of these projects, that larger scale project in those areas, they're going to push them then farther behind on the SIF list and or maybe drop them off the list, because now we've got a short-term solution here that's working for maybe 5 to 10 years, but the major problem is still there. And I'm thinking of St. Louis Park, we've got a whole series of bridges there on Highway 100 that need to be replaced, and we did Scarfa Lane the year before through there, so we got some extra traffic flow, but that's just a short-term solution for that. And I mean, is this going to end by doing these low-cost alternatives? Are we going to then be pushing some of these bigger projects off and maybe create a bigger problem along the way?
Mr. Hankel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, Truck Highway 100 is the project that you're relating to. Another example of a lower-cost alternative project is the 3M project on Interstate 94. What the guidance provides to the districts is guidance asking them to look at lower cost solutions and to review the feasibility of those solutions, and where appropriate, if it is feasible, determine what those locations are, what the revised cost will be, and to present that option to you as well as the public in helping us to make some final decisions. In not all of these cases will that solution be feasible. And so as we move forward, we're simply directing at this point the district as they update their district plans to give us an indication of where we might be able to do this and how much more we might be able to do at a lower cost. And final determinations about the feasibility of those will be made as we move into the final steps of the state plan as well as the district plan this fall.
Representative Nelson.
Just a little bit of a follow-up on that, I guess. As Representative Hamilton expressed here, some of us in the metro area on the northern end, and all around, because of the lack of money, we're all at times fighting over table scraps. But the concern I have is if we're going to throw in some areas a low-cost solution, and in other areas do the whole enchilada as far as out there, the big project, are we going to have winners and losers, or haves and have-nots in our transportation system, where some people get constantly pushed to the bottom of the chain of, or the list of projects, where others get moved up because of whatever reasons being? I mean, I've seen that happen. Devil's Triangle is in my district, and I'm happy that finally got moved up. But 2 years ago, when they took the money away to finish Crosstown, they promised us it would get done when they got first new money, and then when the transportation bill passed, we were being told, well, we'll be put in the mix like with all the other projects, and I'm happy to see that it did get restored. But they were talking of pushing that back. It was supposed to start last year, pushing it back to 2011, 2013, maybe farther beyond, and I guess that's a concern I think we all share in our district, that if we put a low-cost solution someplace, is that going to drop you out to the bottom of the list for the major project that does need to be done?
Mr. Engel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, the way that I look at this direction is this. I'm hopeful. My gut is telling me that we'll have more winners than we've ever had, where we can get the majority of the mobility and safety improvements at a lower cost to more of the traveling public and to more of your districts across the state of Minnesota. Today, some of these major commitments that we have in our plan are so expensive that, number one, they're really difficult for districts from a MnDOT perspective to afford, and they are getting to be, given the construction index, etc., more and more expensive and more difficult to deliver. I believe that this policy option gives us a way of getting at much more of the mobility problem in the Twin Cities, as well as regional centers, as well as interregional corridors, in a way that's cost-effective and really gives the user of that transportation system the benefits that they expect from the tax dollar.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like a little more explanation on page 17. You talk about the previous plan focusing on highways. How far away from the focus on highways are we going here? Are we going to stop highway construction to look at other things now, or what? And what specifically, we talk about the need to upgrade the three lanes around the metro area, Highway 94 north and others, the interchange at 169, 494. Are we going to abandon that now to get to the multimodal stuff here and forget about highways, or what are we doing?
Mr. Hankel.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, I would frame this plan and how it looks at modes as not giving up on highways, rather looking for a highway plan that meets multiple objectives and multiple modes. I have no intent in this planning effort of eliminating those needs or our attempts to fix the mobility problems on a three-ring interstate, but there are ways that we can make the investment go further to address transit, to address freight, etc. And our look at the investment needs, we'll look at all of those needs as we try to prioritize highway investment.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, my question is directed to the Commissioner. Commissioner, thank you for meeting with myself and other folks from along Highway 14. Commissioner, I'd like to turn your attention to page 16. Commissioner, I believe that when we talked about preservation, we talked about safety, we talked about how to place those into a relative mix. In other words, is preservation now more important than safety? And I certainly understand, Commissioner, that the legislative auditor talked about the importance of preserving pavement. At the same time, Commissioner, I think it's probably more important to preserve life than to preserve pavement. So I'm concerned, Commissioner, as I look at this plan, that roads like Highway 14 and perhaps Highway 60, as Representative Hamilton described, are going to be put down on a priority list, saying it's more important to preserve pavement. So I'd like you to address where safety is actually fitting in terms of relative importance with preservation. And then secondly, if a road like Highway 14 doesn't need to be preserved in the next 5 to 10 years, what hope is there for doing safety improvements, especially if those safety improvements include widening it to a four-lane road?
Right. Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think as Mr. Hankel has referenced several times, that safety trumps everything that we're all about, and safety is our number one priority. And as we look to deliver this program and our projects, safety trumps everything. And we can't emphasize that enough. And as we work with you all on the specific areas of concern in your areas, that's got to be a prime focus of the discussion. And so, and we do believe there are safety improvements that can be made in any area where there are concerns that would improve that safety in those areas, and we'll work really hard with you to do that. And we want to really emphasize to everybody, as we look, again, as Mr. Hankel says, as we look to preservation or low-cost improvement, safety is incorporated in those areas as we move forward, and it does trump everything else.
Mr. Chair, if I just might follow up on that. Commissioner, thank you. And that was the answer that we had also talked about, I believe, 2 weeks ago. I just want to confirm and be able to bring back the message then to folks in my area that the preservation commitment does not necessarily trump or preclude work on a road like Highway 14, because that is a message that we're starting to hear, that once we do preservation, there won't be money left to do anything else. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Representative Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that the questions really point out that some perspective on this bill. I think a lot of people have expected that this bill is the be-all and end-all of transportation funding. And if you remember the painful legislative road we traveled down from 2005 until 2008 to get it passed, you will recall we went from a 10-cent gas tax to a 5-cent tax. And even the 10-cent proposal and the other portions of that plan were a compromise from pie in the sky, everything's great in Minnesota transportation, everywhere across the state. So I think that the questions are highlighting that this is very much
a very compromised plan that is very much smaller than the needs that we heard about at the legislature over the last 4 years. We heard that there was $24.5 billion worth of need over the next 10 years, and we funded $6.6 billion worth of need. So it doesn't come as a great surprise to me when my mayors are calling and my city engineers are calling and saying, we're not finding the money to do this great expansion project in our area because of the safety and the preservation and the bridges, and boy, you really made them spend a lot of money on bridges. And my answer is that is the nature of the legislative process we went through to get this bill passed. So I just wanted to highlight the fact that this is a compromise bill, and I know you're getting some tough questions from people of, you know, why aren't you doing this and why aren't you doing that, and I think we have to keep in perspective that this bill was one quarter of the size of what it should have and could have been.
The senators, I don't see any hands, not that I'm skipping over you. Oh, maybe I did. That's Senator Koch, is that right?
Eric Thoreau.
Or Eric Thoreau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being recognized. And I appreciate the committee for letting me join you today. I do represent Southeastern Minnesota, and we had an immediate bridge closure just in our recent past. And I would like to thank the commissioner for responding really quickly, and also acknowledge that Mel Ray Sukio, who is the district engineer in District 6 in our area, has been very responsive and working really well and attending all of our committee meetings. Our local government and regional support system has been really great in dealing with this disaster. But the closure of the Interstate Bridge in Winona is, for us, a multi-million dollar economic disaster. So even though the bridge is still there, it's sending ripples through all of Southeastern Minnesota. And we're really appreciative that you're trying to get us up and running again as quickly as possible. The thing that I would like clarified from this body, and then also from the commissioner, what we're hearing on the ground is that there's people aren't certain to what level there is flexibility written within the bill for either the commissioner or this group to reappropriate as necessary or reauthorize spending within the bill. Winona's on the list. I'm looking at the schedule here for 2014. And we're certainly interested in getting our bridge fixed or replaced before that time. I know there's been some plans for temporary fixes, but as many of you have expressed, sometimes it's those Band-Aid solutions that will get us through the immediate weeks, but we're really worried about them dropping to the bottom again of the list. I think one of the representatives on the other side mentioned that. And then just kind of stringing along these projects. So my question is, what sort of permissive language is there within the bill, or a sense of permissive intent within this body to allow the commissioner to reappropriate within the bill or move up deadlines?
Commissioner or Mr. Hankel?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding of the legislation is that it's very clear to the authority that the legislature has in making changes to the rollout of bonding. I think the response is, if I understand the law correctly, is that the legislature would need to act to change our bonding authority to accelerate Winona, if that's what you were really asking to do. It directs a certain number of bonds to the bridges, and it's non-directed in other cases. But in total, we need to be able to have earlier bonding authority, greater bonding authority, to be able to do that. If you recall, one of the assumptions, not to get too long-winded here, is the last bullet here, that from a programmatic standpoint, this bridge plan, as it's been laid out, is one that's affordable based on the current scope and the timing. If we move any of these even a little bit, it affects the entire program. It makes it more difficult to deliver these projects when they're needed for the other bridges that are earlier. So, simple answer is, I think we would ask for the legislature to change the distribution of bonds and our bonding authority, and we'd look at what we might be able to deliver based upon what the legislature might be able to deliver in terms of bonding authority.
Okay. Do you have a follow-up? Otherwise, Senator Murphy and myself would like to comment too.
Thank you.
Do you have a follow-up? I'll give you that one after Senator Murphy wants to ask the question on that particular item.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Hinkle, you know, we realize that with Chapter 152, there are several other fixes that need to be made. If the department could come up with a list of recommendations, that'd be fabulous. The other thing is that there are, this could become a time-sensitive matter in a lot of different regards. The other thing that we're going to need help with is if it does reach to that head, and it, you know, whether it's the bridge in Winona or the DeSoto Bridge, whichever one, where we need to have some more flexibility, we're going to need the help of the department in convincing the governor that we do need a special session to make some adjustments here so that these projects can go forward and that the, you know, the integrity of your plan can be maintained. The other thing that I may want to mention is that, you know, in regards to the fund balances that we have inside the department, and we've had these discussions offline in the past, we're trying to build these fund balances back up so that it would provide some flexibility in the case of other emergencies that may arise. And I just want the committees to understand that we've got a very low fund balance, but the department's trying to make way and trying to build those fund balances. In the future, that's what's going to save us from having to go back into special session and change some components of this 152. But, you know, that's probably 2, 3, 4, 5 years out. So, but Mr. Hinkle, if you could make some recommendations to our committee, we would appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy.
Senator Rose, do you have a follow-up?
Oh, that's fine. Thank you.
Well, I would just like to comment again. I hope that the committee didn't feel that the legislature has identified any particular bridge, and I think we've got to be careful in that,
right,
because we haven't done that, and we don't do it. We've got the criteria for all these 13 bridges, and as these criteria apply, and the need is because of, you know, it could be the need would move up. I think any of those bridges that you have could change tomorrow if something happens.
Right.
So I don't want to have someone go out here and say the legislature is going to pass a bill and identify a particular bridge. Because I don't think we'll do that. Senator Murphy,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. excuse me. Mr. Hinkle, maybe you can also, in that report, because one of the House members was talking about, you know, this 152 only rectified about a third of the need out there. If you could state, you know, how much money the department is going to need, and the locals too, in you know, rectifying especially those bridges that are out there, whether it's the, you know, $1 billion where the state bridges, or $700 or $800 million of local bridges, you know, identify some places where we may be able to seek some revenue, whether federal government or from our own taxpayers. That would that'd be a great help. But if you could come up with that list to kind of show, hey, here's what we're doing, and it's a good thing, but we still have these pressing needs over here. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Magnus, if I could just skip you for a minute. Senator Salton had a follow-up, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The one thing I'd like to just, you know, thank MnDOT for, and also the fact is that you know, all the employees and staff, and especially Mr. You know, have been very, very wonderful about acknowledging that these are projects that could not have been done without the new investment. And that, I think, is so very important, because we made a major investment in transportation, and it's been spun many different ways. But I think for the public, the whole issue of being transparent is very important, and I think just acknowledging, I heard that many times today, that there's an opportunity, you're excited about this. And I want to thank you for being here today and sharing this and all this work that you've done. And as Representative Portman said earlier, there's many projects that are not funded here. And I think we knew that as we went forward, and that's not your fault. We need to continue to look at that, but your input is very important. So maybe not a question, but just a comment. It feels like the tone of this meeting is very, very different, and I really applaud that. And I think that's because there was a team effort here, and I look forward to building that team between the legislature and the department and really restoring the public's trust. So please call on us and keep us informed as well.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hinkle, I'm looking at page 9 of your handout here, and just so I have an understanding of it, it looks like you're proposing to spend $2.519 million, and that $679 million of it is coming from the federal funds. And as I look at the program delivery numbers, they add up here to be $309 million. I think that, you know, and Senator Murphy brought this up earlier as we're looking at how we're comparing the Chapter 52 bill to actually what we're getting here is MnDOT's understanding of it. I don't come up with the $309 million in the of program delivery funds in the actual Chapter 152. I come up with $292 million. But again, my initial question is, are those numbers correct, the $2.5 billion and the $679 million? And of the $679 million, are you anticipating that the federal funds will continue to flow as the last federal program indicated, or do you anticipate any cuts in that?
Mr. Hinkle.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, first to your last question, the statewide corridor bridge fund assumes that federal funds will flow to us as they have been historically, and that we will continue to see a stable level of funding. Right or wrong, that's the assumption today. Second, the legislation provides that bonds can be used for program delivery. This estimate of program delivery costs is based on district's input to us on each of the individual bridges and what they expect that cost to be. And so I don't think, we'll have to get a verification on this, Representative, but it doesn't exceed, at least, the authority that's been given to us within the bill. What I need to make note of is the program delivery cost at the bottom of this particular graphic under district bridge and approach. These are actually program delivery costs coming from our regular funds going to the districts, so they are separate from the bond provision and the bond provided program delivery costs.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you. In a follow-up, and this is to the commissioner, and welcome to the job, Commissioner. But my friend Mr. Hamilton here, Representative Hamilton here, has shared with me in the past about his concerns about the deal made to include Trunk Highway 60 and the concerns that it would not be followed through on. And I know that he sent you a letter, Commissioner, dated April 29th, signed by himself, Representative Hamilton, Senator Vickerman, the senator from that area that has Highway 60, and also from the chairman, House Chair Bernie Leader, and Senate Chair Steve Murphy, indicating that it's pretty clear in their letter that they felt that a deal's a deal. They put Highway 60 in there, all of Highway 60, not the portion coming from the Iowa border. When they get the bypass done later this year, I hope that'll be about 4 miles of it done, but not that short section from the Iowa border to Interstate 90, but indeed the other roughly 20 miles going from Windham to near St. James. And you know, I'm concerned too, because I know the heartaches that we went through among our group to get this bill passed and work through this. And it looks like first the question, I guess, did you get the letter, Commissioner? Have you responded to it, Commissioner?
Not in writing yet.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure you got it. Well, I just want to reiterate to everyone here, and I know we've got a lot of friends around the table here that are willing to step up and help. They're separate, but we feel the deal is a deal. The deal was done to get all the Highway 60 finished, and that's our understanding of the deal. And I would just toss out, it would be in MnDOT's best interest to support the idea of getting Highway 60 done completely as soon as possible.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is not necessarily related to the expanded bridge funding, but and it applies to the metro area, although I would interject that I lend my support to the folks on Highway 60. Having traveled that, it does need to be unified the whole way. But whether you are prepared to answer it now or if we could meet and talk about it, I'm interested in your how you incorporate and work with the Metropolitan Council as you update the transportation plan. The communities around the area are updating their comprehensive plans, and they've got some pretty high expectations in terms of density requirements and so on from the Met Council on the communities. And I've seen in several of them the problems come up that when proposals are there to meet those requirements, cities are very reluctant to take the action because the transportation systems don't accommodate it. So are you operating on a chicken-egg thing that first they got to hatch the chicken and get the trouble created before you'll do anything, or is there any coordinated planning for some of these projects to kind of go in sync so that you don't aggravate the whole area? I mean, it's Highway 7 is one. I know there's efforts on Highway 55 to try to deal with this. Highway 12 in the Ridgedale area, the access, there's need to improve that, you know, interchange with 394. Some of these things are you know, kind of ongoing, but they're connected to the development and redevelopment of areas. And I don't get a sense that there's a real coherence of planning or connection between what that council is doing or telling communities to do and what your intentions and plans are. So if you can answer it in a thumbnail, but that's on my agenda when we meet.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think that's an excellent question, and we certainly understand your concerns. I think Mr. Hinkle can provide some insight in particularly how we're integrating our transportation plan activities with the Met Council. I think I can give you a quick thumbnail sketch of where we're at.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, first I would say we have been progressing towards a fully coordinated and collaborative process with the Met Council over the last 10 years. Are we fully there yet? Probably not. There's always work that can be done, but I think we're as close to a strong collaboration with the community as well as with our partner in the Met Council as we've ever been. And what do I mean by that? 10 years ago, when I was working in the Metro District and working on the very first collaborative effort with the council was developing a transportation policy plan, and MnDOT was developing its own state plan and district plans, and there really wasn't much collaboration. Today, I would say it this way. The Met Council really relies on the department and the Metro District and this region in particular to bring forward its priorities, and we have worked collaboratively to develop this option of low-cost congestion solutions like we have never done in the past. And in so doing, we've worked with the Transportation Advisory Board through a representative of the council, Mr. Carl Oren, that's sitting in the audience, as well as staff from the Metro District and Central Office, to assure that we are at least moving forward collaboratively on our policies and our performance objectives. The most difficult part of this game is reaching that consensus when you are so far behind when it comes to investments. We are extremely far behind. And I would suggest again that the low-cost approach might help us to get caught up to the place where we don't have as much tension as exists, where communities are growing rapidly, highways are filling up capacity, buses are filling up, and we get to solutions that are mutually acceptable within our revenue parameters. So, as the commissioner said, we'd love the opportunity to sit down and chat with you more about the exact process, the details of that, and how we work together to come to mutual conclusions.
Thank you.
Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to react a little bit to a question Senator Erickson Rope asked and the answer that Mr. Henkel gave to the comment that Senator Murphy made about the Winona Bridge. The only way I can see that we would need a special session of the legislature, or the legislature to take any action at all to address the Winona Bridge, is that if the $600 million we gave you in bridge bonding authority in fiscal 2009 and fiscal 2010 isn't enough to solve that problem, which would communicate to me that the Winona Bridge is not a Tier 1 bridge, which would say that it doesn't have average daily traffic above 1,000 or it doesn't have a sufficiency rating below 50. And I wonder if either of those are the case, then couldn't it still be a Tier 1 project because it could be identified by the commissioner as a priority project? So my question is, isn't the $600 million we provided in years 1 and 2 for bridge bonding sufficient to address the Winona Bridge?
Mr. Hank.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, at this point, the funds are sufficient to address the Winona Bridge, as I understand the bridge office and the districts are recommending. I don't see the need to make any changes at this point in time, but as we move forward, as we make repairs, as we watch what's happening on these bridges, if something changes, then we might be pursuing something different.
Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner Sorrell and Mr. Henkel, for being here. I really appreciate it. And I'm kind of a detailed guy, and so I've been looking at a lot of the inspection reports and so on, the several bridges. And when I saw your statement on page 16, the preservation of the system structural condition, it does concern me a little bit. If you're going to make some, let's say, process changes, and the Commissioner and I just mentioned it just before the meeting here, if there's going to be some process changes that might tend to bring up additional work, that I don't think that we could say that that some of these bridges weren't a surprise. I think the Hastings maybe wasn't a surprise. I think the Winona Bridge was a surprise. Certainly the St. Cloud Bridge was a surprise, but I think we have inspection reports on all of these that may go back some time and show some things that probably should have been worked on just to preserve these assets, and these are hugely expensive assets. And looking at the 43 bridge, Highway 43 down in Winona, I'm seeing a lot of repeats of the same kinds of things that I did see on the 35W bridge, where there were things that were mentioned for years and years and were not addressed. And this is what I see as preservation. Some of these maybe don't need to be replaced if they're preserved properly. And I guess that, you know, there's a statement that I've been saying for quite some time here that the Golden Gate Bridge was opened in 1938. The Brooklyn Bridge was opened in 1883. The Mackinac Bridge was opened in 1957. None of those are looked at as having a replacement time. They're all being preserved. They're all being maintained. And I think there's some of these assets that we need to spend a bit of this, what would you call it, the low-cost solutions up front to preserve them. Perhaps even the Hastings Bridge, where there's a lot of paint failure. Maybe it could have been saved for a little longer. Senator Stevens says no, but I think there are things that we probably need to look at as far as preservation goes, and I'm hoping that that number is also going to be created here so that we can look at that need too. And like Representative Hortman says, we only passed a portion of what the total need is, and I'm thinking of other needs. I don't have any significant bridges in my district, but a lot of my people do cross over a lot of significant bridges. And I think that there are going to be some roadways down in my area, one of them being Highway 3, that doesn't have a lot of earmarked money for it, but we are now looking at a major increase in population down in the Rosemont area that are going to be traveling through that area. So there's a lot of need here, and I'm hoping that we can use your expertise here to do some more prediction. So, thank you. That's my comment.
Any comments, Nat?
So, Chairman, Senator, those are really good points, and I'd like to continue a dialogue with you about that to get to the root of what you're talking about there. But we agree that preservation and maintenance of our bridges are critical as well. And I think we all recognize our world turned upside down with the inclusion of gusset plates in our world, and that will be the subject of another hearing. But all those things we have to be concerned about, and I agree with you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. Commissioner, Mr. Hinkle, thank you so much for your updates. My first question is going back to page 15, and I know you've answered a number of questions already regarding the no business as usual deal. What I'd like to do is give you my interpretation of what I think this means, especially after the questions, and tell me if I'm right, and if not, please correct me. What I'm hearing you say is that you're really not going to be doing much in the way of road expansion. What you are going to be looking at is areas where there are accidents or major problems, and you're going to try to address those using, you're saying, low-cost, high-benefit strategies. So try and spend as least amount possible to make some changes. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hinkle.
Representative, that is correct, with the exception of the statement regarding expansion. I think what we will be looking at is the type of expansion. We don't always need to expand in the way that we have. There are places where we can fix, like we have in front of 3M on Interstate 94, which is still called an expansion project, but we do it for a third of the cost.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Mason, yes.
And then my second question goes back to page 16, where we're talking about the roundabout. And a number of years ago, I used to sit on a city council, and I remember one of the citizens brought up a roundabout as a solution to one of our redevelopment areas, and then the experts at that time were telling us that wasn't particularly safe. And now I'm seeing that concept used a lot. So is that a compromise on safety, or is that just a difference of opinion right now?
Mr. Hinkle.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it's not a compromise on safety. It's an application of a safety improvement at an appropriate location. It's not a fix that fits everywhere, but we will never compromise safety because of a solution. We will look for the right solution, and that is a solution that fits in some circumstances.
Thank you.
Senator Oldsley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I would like to direct my question to Commissioner. First of all, I need to thank you. I think that this plan will make our roads safer and more efficient. But this committee, this joint committee, has heard that MnDOT's lost a number of engineers over the years. And with all this additional work, I guess I have a two-part question. Number one, is this work, the engineering work, going to be sublet primarily? Or if it's going to stay in-house, is there a plan to retain and expand the number of engineers that are within the department?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, that is a good question. And what we try to do within our program is to try to retain a proper balance between utilizing outside resources and internal resources as well. And clearly there needs to be some checks and balance from an internal perspective. And if you go, it's been proven across the nation that agencies that have gone too far one way, particularly with outsourcing activities, it catches up to them eventually and hurts them. And we don't intend to go there. We need to achieve a proper balance in our program between the outside help that we need to supplement the expertise that we have and what we don't have. And that's a key part of our approach, is to have that balance and to really be cognizant of that, because it's easy to move in a direction where you're completely outsourcing your staff and all of a sudden be caught up in that. So
we need to be cognizant of that as we move forward. And your question about engineers, that is a question that's on my mind particularly, and how we're going to handle that in the department, and look at how we recruit, how we retain, and it is a question that's in the forefront of my mind, and you know, I need to look at that issue further and why that's happening, and what we can do to alleviate that.
A follow-up? Thank you. I've heard, I know we all hear from people within the department that have different stories, and some of the stories that I've heard is that we've lost people to the point where we are, I think, maybe going, the pendulum is swung the other direction, and this is before your tenure, of course. But my concern then is that, and this may be anecdotal, that we've lost engineers that are hired by whoever hires them, and then they're contracted back to the state, and yet their salaries then are like maybe twice what they're making. Is that maybe one of the big drawbacks? And if it is, I would appreciate letting this committee know so maybe we can help alleviate that concern.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, again, that's an issue that I intend to take a look at, and certainly will work with you all on that. And there are some concerns that the competitive environment, it's a national concern as well, but particularly in this state where we do have engineers leaving to work with other public sector agencies or the private sector, the competitiveness of our salaries are an issue, and I will look at that.
Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I'm looking at page 17. And as people are turning to it, I would like to thank you for appointing a Deputy Commissioner Chief Engineer, following up on Senator Olsen's comments. On page 17, you mentioned multimodal, and you have the transit, and you have freight. And I thank you for including freight in that list, especially in greater Minnesota, the importance of freight to the agricultural, timber, and other industries. My question for you is this. If you've had a chance to talk about freight more specifically, and if so, would you be prioritizing publicly owned freight lines for renovation and expansion, or how would you go about determining where freight rail money would be going?
Commissioner, or Mr. Hankel?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, first and foremost, we're not that far along in the process. Second, a reaction, I'm not sure that we have the authority to do that currently. But I'd like to chat more with you about that as I talk with Cecil Selness and others in that office about what the needs are. At this point, this is intended to say freight is growing in importance. The trends are obvious, and there is a need for us to deal with that in this state, not only on what's trucking between states, but within the state in the terms of distribution and what's happening in the timber industry in northern Minnesota. As we look more into this, we'll look at where we have authority for solutions and try to document those as a part of our plan for the district to look at in more detail.
Senator Murphy has a wrap-up. I think we're at that point. No further questions.
Mm-hmm. Senator Murphy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, first I want to thank the commissioner for being here and imparting some of his thoughts upon the committee, and also to welcome aboard Mr. Sahitam, who is now, well, we've known him as Connie for a long time, and now he's kind of moved up a little bit, so I guess he gets the Mr. treatment instead of just Connie. But welcome aboard. We all look forward to working with you, and to Mr. Hinkle and the rest of the MnDOT staff, thanks again for your your time. I know that there's been just for the members, there's been more activity going on over at MnDOT in the past 3 or 4 months than I think in the past 3 or 4 years. And for Mr. Hinkle and the commissioner and all the folks to come with a presentation that is in depth and expansive as this, you guys put your work in here. We appreciate it. We recognize that you've got 40,000 things on your plate and not enough time to get them all cleaned off, but so thank you for that. We appreciate I personally appreciate kind of the change from a roads only type of approach to something that is more multimodal, because we've been talking about that for the 16 years that I've been in the legislature, and I think you had a good discussion around the table. Senator Sieben, I believe, mentioned the high-speed rail as Representative Hausman did, and it's good to know that some of our ports, both water ports and airports, not just here in the metropolitan area, but all across the state, are going to get the attention that they deserve, as well as you know, our passenger rail and freight rail initiatives. You know, these things add flavor to our state. It also takes some of the pressure off our roads. The more of these semi-trailers that we can put on the back end of a train, that's that many fewer that are out running on our roads. And I particularly appreciate the directional change when it comes to technology and utilizing technology for safety, whether it's cable medium barriers, better lighting, better striping on our roads, whatever it may be. It saves lives. And, you know, we lost 500 people last year. Hopefully this year we'll improve upon that statistic, and as we march forward, those rates will lower year in and year out. In regards to some of the unknowns that were on page 7, and we realize that a lot of those things fluctuate from time to time, whether it's the price of steel or fuel or you know, whatever it may be. But if you can keep a running conversation with the legislators in this room as to some of the changes that you see coming, not only in the next couple of months, but in the next couple of years, that would help us do our jobs a little bit better. And finally, in regards to, well, two things. The bridges and some of the discussion that's been going around in our state now about bridges here over the past few weeks, especially with the closure or restriction, I should say, now in Winona. If you can keep us as abreast as possible. We're reading a lot of reports, not only the legislative auditor's report or the one from GPM, but a lot of other in-house reports, that documents that have been made available to the legislature in regards to bridge inspection. And we're recognizing, we're seeing a trend of things like pack rust and things like that, and bent gusset plates that are causing us to move some of these bridges higher up on the lift. And, you know, so if you could just kind of keep us abreast as to where that's going. I know our bridge committee will take care of a lot of that. In regards to some of the things that Representative Hamilton had to say, if there is a meeting on the western end of his district, I'd like to be there. So if you could make sure that I was there, I would appreciate that, because it's not only Highway 60. I know that when we talked about how to write legislation that would take a corridor like Highway 60 and advance that, we were looking at using that as kind of a model throughout the state on some of these larger, or maybe not great big inner, you know, interstate connect, or I should say inner city connections from one city to the next. We were looking at that as a model to try to improve some of the services that we deliver, like on Highway 14. If we use Highway 60 as a model, maybe we move Highway 14 to the front faster and in a better way, actually, using some of the involvement of the citizenry, local elected officials, and technology to make these safer corridors. Anyway, I'd like to be at that meeting, and because I think it's going to bear fruit. I know that Representative Morrow has a highway over in his district that's much like Highway 60, that's much like Highway 61 or 58, or just pick out anybody's road here. But I think that we're moving in the right direction here, and I'm looking forward to a lot of change going on and a lot of exciting things. So thanks again.
Thank you.
And I, if I may comment too, Commissioner, my concern is the federal situation, because supposedly, unless the Congress acts, there's going to be roughly, as I indicated, 34% cut to all the states. And as I look further what they're doing, it looks like the way they want to solve it is by privatizing our toll roads. And I don't know what your opinion is, but I hope we never get to that in the state of Minnesota, that we toll our. And that's really what they're saying at the federal level, and it kind of concerns me. With the, I was glad to hear you talk about outsourcing. And again, I think the thing that we as the legislature appreciate, one of the problems that we haven't had for a number of years, you as a commissioner or your department, at least now is coming in and showing, advocating to some degree. We have not had for quite some time the department come in advocating, saying they need money for roads. And that is unfortunate, because right now, some of the things that came up, I think two things that you should advise is, one, definitely, I understand, as Senator O'Flynn said, the problem in retaining personnel is, even with your top, your salary and your top personnel, there's no, my understanding is practically a cent, few cents difference per hour. And that's a real problem, I think, that we have to be concerned about. And that's why I'm concerned about, again, outsourcing or some of the things that are going to happen. And I think the one thing that, as a department, that I would like to see you happen is, again, be open with the legislature and say, we need money, not say we're going to just do this and we don't need money. We've not had that at all. One of the reasons, the difficulty in getting a finance bill, as Representative Horstman pointed out, right now, any of these bridges and that fracture critical, the money is there. You just have to readjust your thing. That's why the money was there. If we couldn't have passed that little bill that we had, we started out and had to come all the way down to realize what we could pass or what would be accepted. And boy, we know we're a long ways off, as Representative Horstman pointed out, $24.5 billion, and we got six for 10 years. We're going to have more problems, especially now at the vehicle miles, or the gasoline receipts are coming down, and they're going to buy, if you want to say it, a less expensive automobile. So our receipts are going to come down. I think it's imperative that you keep on top of the legislature, even if you have to raise heck with Murphy once in a while and say we need some money. That'd be fine. But anyhow, you know, I appreciate your coming in, and thank you very much. We certainly appreciate you coming in, and again, for the members too, if you didn't look at it, these other your other data that you have in this bridge program is very, very good.
Right.
And thank you, members. And for the members, I'd like to point out that the joint city committee. Yeah, we're going to, the joint committee, what we call a joint committee, not the transportation committee, is going to go to the 35W bridge next Tuesday on June 24th. And after that, the joint committee, for you that are on the joint committee, we're going to have a meeting, and they're going to the department is going to respond to the Grant Moody report. So if there are any further questions, thank you for being here. The meeting is adjourned.